This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Let us get into that conversation with Nikki as we debunk the stigmas around bipolar disorder, rather. Nikki, good evening. Thanks for your time.
Hi, Seka. Good evening. Thank you for the time. And hi to all the listeners.
Do we call bipolar disorder a disability indeed?
You know what? There's so many ways to see it, and there's always two sides to the story. And sometimes I find it an absolute crippling disability, and other times I find it like I'm a superhero, I'm a superwoman, I've got an invisible cloak. It's such a paradox. But yes, you know, there's speak about, oh, stay away, you know, that person's bipolar, you never know, they might be too volatile. And then other times people take their hat off to you and say, wow, look at that, look what she's achieving. And that's with even our bipolar being in the mix, you know. So, I do think people need to realize that it's not a disability. In fact, it can actually be quite the contrary.
And, you know, speaking about bipolar disorder, what is it, and what are people not understanding for it to be?
Well, let's put it this way. People get depressed. People have bad days. And then they sort of so-called snap out of it. Things change and they're all back on the little road and they can see the sunshine. With bipolar, it comes on in very different ways. For myself, for example, for 2 days before I have what we call an episode, is my body will start aching and aching and aching. And I think, oh, I've just got the flu or whatever. It's a subconscious way of fighting it off, thinking I've got an episode coming on. And when it comes on, it hits hard. And what I mean by an episode, it means you hit the downest of downest. All you can see is suicide. All you can see is a black hole. That's the difference. And you don't know if it's going to last 3 days or 3 months. You don't know how long you're going to be down this rabbit hole.
Sure.
And that's, I think, the very frustrating thing.
Sure.
Well, I think, you know, from that point of view, it's very different from depression, and people need to understand that.
You know, and we'll come back to that, right, and how you get yourself out, if even possible, because I suppose with depression, we say people get themselves out of that rabbit hole. But before we get to that, Nikki, you were diagnosed at the age of 14?
That is correct, yes. As in those days, it was called manic depression. They didn't have the words bipolar.
Okay. And, you know, what had happened for you to be diagnosed, and, you know, what was the reaction like from your family as well?
Oh, shame. I still feel sorry for them. I mean, that's another story for maybe another day. But basically, I just became quite volatile as a teenager. I've always been a rebel from birth anyway. And then suddenly it felt like this thing just came over me and I couldn't get out of bed. And for 3 months, I stayed in my bedroom with my curtains closed at the age of 14. And my mum and dad didn't know what to do with me. And they sent me to all these so-called shrinks, these psychologists who really didn't know what they were dealing with. I mean, given I'm 55 now and you take it back to when I was 14, that's a long time ago, and science and neurological science has come a very long way since then.
And I then wonder, what did you have to stay away from? Is there something when you've got bipolar disorder that you must stay away from? And when you were, let me start with this one before you answer that staying away. When you were diagnosed, right, you say you stayed in your room for months on end with your curtains closed, so you just needed the pure darkness. How were you taken out of that room? Who took you? Who had the pleasure?
You're asking the hardest question. You know, the thing is with bipolar, you know, you shut so much stuff out of your memory. You just, it's like if when you read my book, you'll see that there are things I didn't remember that I've been reminded of. And I think, oh, seriously, could I have done that or whatever it is? I think what happened was just going to all these shrinks and just, they were just medicating me. And the more they medicated me, because the less they understood about the so-called disease, you know, this chronic condition. And those made me worse. They made me even more suicidal. So I just eventually decided to run away. because I thought that was the only way to do things. I thought, right, by running away, it would solve all my problems, but you can't run for yourself.
Mm.
You know, you're always going to carry emotions within yourself. And with that obviously came quite a few life lessons, and I thought, okay, you've got to get your shoes back on and start walking the right path, which is a very, very difficult thing too. It's what they call, you know, seriously mind over matter.
Mm.
It's a hard, hard journey to walk, but, you know, once you've walked it and you've come out of it and you look back and say, what was that all about, you know? And then you're so proud of yourself. You think, wow, look at me.
Sure. And Nikki, you know, you say before you have your episodes, you fear that your body will be super painful, right? You have aches and pains in your body. That still happens even now?
Oh, even to this day. And I still have this, as I say, sort of subconscious denial because I kind of keep thinking, no, man, I'm sort of too experienced at this. I would know. And yet it's just, no, I'm feeling fluey, I'm tired, I'm worn out, I'm stressed. Any excuse I can find. No, I'm taking vitamins. No, it's all fine. But no, when my body aches. And then the nightmares start, also about 2 days before an onset. And when those nightmares come and then you're pouring sweat at night, no matter what the temperature is, then I know, then my body's telling me, hey, watch out. You know, you need to actually rest. You need to distance yourself from the world for a bit.
Sure. And, you know, what are some of the challenges, you know, being diagnosed at 14, finding ways to deal with it to where you are now in your 50s? What are some of the challenges that you have had to face, you know, because of this disorder?
I think many of my challenges have been just to try and prove myself to the world that I'm not sick, because people think of it as a sickness. So many of my challenges have been that. So I've always striven for perfection. I was actually earmarked to be head girl of a private school I was attending. I've been earmarked as I played tennis for, in those days, Natal, KZN. And I was always earmarked as the best of the best. And that sounds very, what's the word? Anyway, I had to get beyond that. I had to get over being ruled by other people, and I just kind of ran away from them and said, look, watch this, I'm going to do this on my own. So I found freedom in my own way, which was by working and just excelling and just going straight to the top and just fighting relentlessly and putting this theatrical mask on so people never actually thought there was anything going on inside. So that in itself, I would say, is a life skill.
That sounds like quite the life skill, Nikki, to be able to put this face on to say, hey, you know, I'm still good enough, despite what you're going through. But do you think then that there were certain life choices that you made or your life went in a particular trajectory because of this disorder, or because you sound like such a positive person, you try push yourself to limits, but also to show people that it does not rule you. This disorder does not rule you. Do you think that because of that positiveness, the positivity that you have, that, well, your life went as best as it possibly could and the way that you had planned?
Yeah, I do believe so. I've learned a lot of positive things. In fact, probably a lot more than some people who just sort of, I'm sorry to say, maybe are living more mundane lives. I've made the most stupid mistakes in my life, impulsive. Very impulsive, which I put right down to bipolar, and very, very stupidly so, like I say. But at the same time, I've had the most incredible experiences. I've traveled the world. I've done mostly largely through work and being recognized for the work that I've done. And, you know, I think I literally have fallen in sort of stepping stone by stepping stone and never really looking back as to how I got where I was. And when I say was, it's because now, at the age of 55, I've fallen way behind again due to a lot of the mistakes I've made. And as I say, that was just very bad, impulsive, bipolar choices, which is what happens. But now I've got to get over myself, and I've got to find a way through the debt and the sadness and the disappointment that I feel now. So my book is very much about, hey, let's just laugh at ourselves. Look at the fun stuff and be ridiculous, because life is ridiculous.
And we'll come to the book, right? Because I want us to delve quite deep into this very book that you have written, Memoirs of a Bipolar polar bear.
Correct.
I actually really love that. Do you think that some of the career choices that you made was because of the disorder?
Just to clarify, are you saying about the book?
No, I'm saying, do you think some of the career choices that you made was because of the disorder?
Yes, very much so. It was, again, it's impulsiveness. I'd be in a particular job, or I'd be freelancing because I was in the film industry in the early days. So I was freelancing, very happy, very wild, very chilled. And then I'd be offered a full-time job. So it took the stress of being a freelancer off. It's like, oh, I've got a full-time paying job. And then you end up in some sort of more corporate environment, even though it's in the film industry. And then you think, what? What have I done? And so career choices and life choices have very much ruled the way I think my life has gone. And I've got to look back, and I do look back, and I say, okay, well, that was good. That was actually really good, because without that, I wouldn't have this. For example, when I eventually burnt out and was in medical hospital for 3 weeks when I was in Johannesburg with my young son who I put in boarding school, I packed up and left after hospital 3 weeks, within 3 weeks, packed up lock, stock and barrel, resigned as director, resigned,
sure.
And moved to another province with no sight of a film industry. I didn't care. But the best part was that it was because I wanted to be with my son.
Sure. Of course, when you do have bipolar disorder, you get medication. And this is medication that, if I'm not mistaken, you will be taking for the rest of your life. Right, Nikki?
Oh, absolutely. I've tried so many times thinking, hey, I'm fine. I don't need my meds. And I try for a couple of months or 6 months or whatever. And then suddenly, bang, it comes back. So, yes, I'm on daily meds. I've got my little bucky here with Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and so on and so on. And I take my meds religiously, and if I forget, my hubby will see it, and he'll bring my pills down to work. Because he knows that by, like, lunchtime the next day, I'm almost starting to shiver with cold. It's almost a withdrawal, but it's so much better just to have those drugs inside you, because you can actually operate like what some people would call a normal human being rather than being dragged down by it. So the medication is essential. If there's one thing I can say, and you've got to fight through it, because it's a long process for the psychiatrist to find the right medication mix for you. So you've just got to stick it out. You really have to stick it out.
And with that medication, Nikki, is there anything, and I suppose this is also how we, you know, debunk these stigmas about bipolar disorder, is there anything that you cannot have? Alcoholic beverages, smoking, you know, those kind of, are there any of those kind of things that you aren't allowed to be having because of your disorder?
Everybody advises you, when I say everybody, your psychologist or your psychiatrist, whatever, say don't drink too much, and are you smoking because it's your anxiety or whatever, and I am a smoker and I do drink wine. And I have no apologies for that whatsoever, because that actually does chill me out. But obviously, as they say, nothing in excess. And that's a very hard, hard thing to deal with too, because, again, as being bipolar, you're either there or you're not there. You're either up or you're down. So you try and, for me, it's taking kind of that middle line and saying, okay, I'm going to have my 2 glasses of wine when I get home. Or I'm going to smoke my packet of cigarettes while I'm at work because I'm that stressed out. I need to breathe. So it's another paradox that just happens, you know.
You spoke about, you know, at the beginning of our interview, you spoke about that rabbit hole that you find yourself in. You don't know how long you'll be in there for. It could be months, could be a few days, could be a few months even, you know. For you, Nikki, how are you able, and I suppose something also that you'll be speaking about in your book, how do you get yourself out of that dark space?
Well, I think the very first thing I can say to that is, please don't let anybody ever tell you just to snap out of it. Just get over yourself, snap out of it. And they say, there's always light at the end of the tunnel. You know this will change, et cetera, et cetera. Those words mean nothing. It's like water off a duck's back. It means absolutely nothing.
Are they more hurtful than anything?
So what you do want to hear is a kiss on your forehead. You want to hear that little snuggle feeling when somebody just is there for you. Those are the things that you want, and that's what pulls me through, is to remind myself of, wow, look at this love and look at this beautiful perfection that life actually has to offer. I would never have made it this far in my life if it hadn't been for my son. I mean, he's been my stalwart my entire life, and I think that's why I was given a son at a young age of 26. So I think just to snap out of it is not the right way to say it, but it's about literally clawing your way up the ladder out of that rabbit hole. Mm. And you can get there. You really can. I've done it so many times, and so many people have, and so many people still can.
Mm. You know, when a person says snap out of it, is it more hurtful?
Is it hurtful? Yeah, because it just shows for me, or I get angry, because personally, I think it's just like, you really don't understand, do you? And so I make a judgment. And that's so totally wrong, because how can I make a judgment on somebody who doesn't know what I'm dealing with? So it's a tricky one, but you can't snap out of something. It's a chemical imbalance. And that skews your view on the world. It doesn't mean that, oh, I really am struggling at work. It means that's my current view on the world, and, oh, I'm going to lose my job or whatever it is. Don't say just snap out of it. You've got to wait for your hormones or your chemical balance to come back in sync. And that's why I go back to this thing where your medication is critical. You need to try and stay on some sort of stable line. It doesn't mean you can't have fun. Doesn't mean you're not going to fall down, but at least it means it's going to be within that kind of eccentric line.
Mm. We are in conversation with author Nikki Bauer, and she is in her book, Destigmatizing Bipolar Disorder. She's been living with bipolar disorder, was diagnosed at the age of 14. Question, comments that you may have for Nikki, do give us a call, 0861-987-000. Drop us an X at PowerFM987 at @Tshegomoagi_. We'll take a short breather. And we will then converse and wrap up our conversation with Nikki, because I want to find out more about this book. What is in this book, when Nikki is such a positive person with lots of humor? So we'll find out from Nikki what she has put in this book to destigmatize bipolar disorder. 0861-987-000 is the number that you can dial.
8 p.m. to midnight. This is Power Perspective on Power 98.7.
All right, let us continue our conversation with Nikki Bauer. She is an author living with bipolar disorder. Is that how it's said, Nikki, that you are living with bipolar disorder?
Absolutely. You spot on there. Okay. It really is. It's living with what they call a chronic condition. Mm-hmm. But in fact, if you look at life, the whole world is in a chronic state. So really, it's no different just to being anybody.
I love how you put it. Let's take a call. Let's take a call from Given in Centurion. Evening, Given.
Hi, how are you?
Good, and you?
Good, man. Sorry, I just joined the conversation a bit late. I just wanted to ask, do people with bipolar know that they do have it? Or people who live with that condition, do they really know they do live with it? Until they consult.
Interesting. I suppose you have to go consult first, but let's find out from Nikki. So you're asking, Given, if before you go to a psychiatrist or psychologist,
do you know
if you've got bipolar?
Yes.
Nikki?
Yes, sorry. Given was very blurred in the background. Just to clarify, if you think you're bipolar, is that what you're asking? Should you go and seek help?
He's asking if people know before they go see a psychologist or a psychiatrist. Is it possible for one to, I suppose, like self-diagnose, right, Given?
As an outsider, can I tell that Nikki is bipolar or has a condition even before he tells us that she's having... Or she's living with bipolar.
Oh, okay. So it's also, yeah. If Nikki, you know, he meets you, so to speak, would he be able to tell that you are bipolar before you even tell him?
I think what you have is a very deep sense that perhaps you are off balance. In fact, of course, you know you're off balance. And in fact, those people around you, close to you, saying, hey, what's going on? You were very kind of volatile last night or whatever, and you can't remember, for example, what it is that you did. I've thrown keys through windows and broken windows and not remembered things. And that was only like, what, 7 years ago kind of thing? So you don't know for sure, but you've certainly got an in-depth subconscious knowing that you do need to seek help. You do need actually chemical balance. And that really is, no matter how many psychologists you see, no matter how much you talk over the table, and no matter how much you tell people about what's happening in your life, until you can get your chemical balance in order, you've got a long battle ahead of you. So please seek help. And then you can start seeing the funny side of life like I can.
Thank you. Thank you, Given. Are you good? Answered.
No, most definitely. Thanks.
Lovely. Thank you. Given in Centurion.
Good luck.
So, Nikki, let's speak about your book, right? Memoirs of a Bipolar Bear. First of all, how did this name come about?
Well, again, it's my ridiculous sense of humor. I mean, to call a book, Hi, I'm Bipolar, just sounds boring. Or The Tragedy of Being a Bipolar. I mean, none of that works for me. It doesn't work in my life. So, and bipolar, I mean, polar bear, it kind of makes sense. Mm-hmm. So it's the memoirs of a bipolar bear. So it's really just a little story going back many, many, many years, countless years, to when I started the book. And, it's become sort of more tongue-in-cheek kind of stuff, but there's a serious lot of truth underneath, hidden in between the words. So I think as a bipolar bear, when you go into hibernation, nobody knows what you're thinking. And that's what we do when we go through episodes. We hibernate, whether it's just in our own minds or physically, and we close those curtains or whatever it might be. A bipolar bear just made a whole lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. And you've obviously then added a bit of humor to it as well. Is this something that you did on purpose?
I think it's more of a coping mechanism, to be honest. I do have a bit of a ridiculous sense of humor at the best or worst of times. And I often say things very inappropriately. And it's not that other social thing that everyone talks about. But I just think the humor is laugh at yourself, look at yourself, see the world as a funny place, and just turn this into a positive. Just see. I mean, my book is really very much, I wrote it for two reasons. One was for me to kind of purge, and the other one was to see, hey, if there's somebody out there struggling, maybe they can read my book, and maybe it's just going to make them feel better. Or maybe the mom of, or the wife of, or the partner of will be able to understand the disorder a little bit better and just then help improve on that person's life. So if there's any reason to read the book, that's where it comes from. It comes from, hey, here's the truth, smack on the table, it's in black and white, and somehow you can deal with all of it, because when you read my stuff, you're going to be like, whoa, stay away, she's trouble, she's bipolar, and yet you'll be, as my author says, funny, zany, off the wall, and yet so true, so down to earth and true.
And you obviously then write about your personal experiences, Nikki, in, you know, a bid or in a way to try and shatter these stigmas that people have surrounding bipolar disorder. We've touched on some of the stigmas. What are the main ones that you still live with to this day when you tell people that you are living with bipolar disorder?
I think the first thing is fear, to be very honest, is fear to be judged. Because that's the one thing, is judgment is a very heavy thing to deal with. For example, when I moved down to Cape Town 7 years ago and I decided to stop consulting and rather find some full-time work because I was getting cabin fever just consulting on Zoom and so on, that they said, how's your health? And I said, perfect. I could not be honest with them in that circumstance and say, I've got bipolar, because I did not want to be judged and I did not want to lose the possibility of getting that job. So, judgment's a big thing. So please don't let people judge you. Be honest. People will actually look up to you and say, wow, you're sitting here right in front of me. You're telling me the truth, your real truth. Mm. I can take you on. I can take you on. I want you as part of my team.
Sure. Let's take a call from George in Soshanguve. Evening, George.
Evening, Sister.
Ngaphila njani?
Yeah, I get Power FM. Ngenzele imini. As he made Power FM, he made my day and also it's my evening. Hayi, namhlanje kusuka simamele nje kunabogogo abotikitiki.
Mara, George.
Khona omunye nako uceda kuphuma we-writer and then nako siphetha aboniki. Yabona ukuthi basinika basimotivate labantu amhambule. Ngizothini mara?
Okay, George. George is so shanguve there. No comment there, Nikki. Don't even worry about that. But let's go back then to your book, Nikki. You know, you speak about some of the stigmas that, of course, you want to, you know, just let go, that people must not be too surrounded or concerned about, right? And, you know, I then wonder, when you wrote your book, was it easy for you to write it? And you say you purged, you know, it was an opportunity for you to also just purge and to just let it all out. But was it easy for you to write it? And was it also maybe a healing process for you?
I think definitely a healing process. I never intended to be that. I mean, in fact, when I started the book, my son and I had moved to KZN. I didn't have any friends. I didn't know anybody. So at night, I'd sit there while he was gaming away on his computer. And I was like, well, what do I do with myself? No, okay, I've painted. Okay, I've planted. Okay, I've done this. All right, just sit down and write. And what started coming out of my fingers, I didn't realize. My subconscious spoke so loudly, so all this book started pouring out of me. And yeah, so I guess in hindsight, it was very much purging. And I never expected it actually to eventually become a book. I just thought I was just scribbling. I had no intention of where this was going to go, if that's what you're asking as well. It's looking in hindsight and reading back on some of my book, it's like, I'm terrified that when the editor's completed that I've got to read it for a final proof. I'm actually terrified because it's scary to look at actually what's gone down. And yes, I'm so excited because I can say to everybody, come, do the same thing. You know, tell your story. It's okay. People actually find it interesting. They find it fascinating. They want to know. People actually want to know about the ways people deal in the world. You don't know what's hiding behind their faces. Mm. You don't know what theatrical mask they're wearing. So just be out there, be honest. And whether you see it as purging or not, just be honest. That's all I can say. Please, just be honest.
Mm. Absolutely. Just be honest about your journey. And, you know, you say you weren't expecting for it to, you know, reach where it has reached. It's going to be available on Amazon, but you've also been invited to two book festivals in July and November. This is great stuff, Nikki.
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, the book hasn't even been actually, you know, physically published, although, as you say, I'm going to be on Amazon, but I am publishing some books anyway, so they'll be available for purchase. I'm actually taking, by the way, pre-orders. And yeah, it's a fantastic recognition for me from what I call the literary king of book festivals in South Africa, a guy called Daryl David. Mm-hmm. And he's invited me to these two. One is in the KZN Midlands, the Midlands Literary Festival, and one's in Richmond. And next year it'll be in Fishhook, and it'll be a couple of other book festivals. So to be invited as a guest to discuss my book and so on is such a massive privilege and such a massive, like, really? This is where I've got to? I thought I was just scribbling 30 years ago. I didn't know. Well, 20 years ago, I didn't know, you know, that this was all going to happen.
Mm. And, you know, with the reception of your book, I'm sure it will be huge as well, even at the festivals. Your book, of course, focuses on your personal life journey, Nikki, with bipolar disorder. Is there also any advice or guidance for people who are living with bipolar disorder or even for their families?
Oh, very, very much. for the families, please, I'm not trying to say buy my book, but just please try and steer from the other side, because that's what I've also tried to do in the book, is you can't put yourself in that person's shoes. But like I said before, just don't tell them, hey, you'll snap out of this or you'll get over it. Just be you, kind, loving, supportive, et cetera, et cetera. That is all that you need to be as a family, or, you know, a best friend or whatever it might be. Just let it go. Let it go. Just understand that that person is going through immense, immense pain. And then when that person kind of does move out of that space, then it's like, oh, can you remember when you did that? And it's like, ha, ha, ha. It's like, no, seriously, really? I did that? I said that? Mm. Oh, I'm so sorry. You know, it's not like you're schizophrenic or something. It's just that you block stuff off in your mind. I certainly do, and I'm sure everybody else has different experiences. But my book is also largely written around a friend of mine, Laura, who hung herself. I was the last person to see her. I was traveling in L.A. In the States on a work job, and she waited to see me, then she hung herself just a matter of hours after seeing me. She waited to see me. So a large part of my book has also been around, you know, Laura and I have been stuck at the hips in school days, and yet there was always an elephant in the room. We never really ever discussed our true pain. We never really discussed stuff. It was always like we were there and we could see the pain in each other's eyes, but we didn't discuss it, because just understanding that pain in somebody's eyes is enough. And that's what I can say to friends and family, is just please, 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 just give that person a hug.
Mm. And for those then who would like to pre-order, how can they do so?
Oh, I'd really appreciate that. The best way, I think, is really to WhatsApp me, which is on 082-441-5795. That's 082-441-5795.
All right. Nikki, thank you so much for your time. Truly appreciate it this evening.
Well, thank you. Can I please just end off with one small little saying which kept me going? It's by Robert Burns. He was 1759 to 1796. So this really takes us into a history here where obviously so-called mental disorder was already around. And he says, "The best laid schemes, O mice and men, often go astray."
Sure.
And I think that's pretty profound, and I think it speaks to many people on many levels, with or without bipolar. Mm. You don't know where your life's going to go, so just enjoy the ride. Absolutely. Get on that swing like you would be when you're a little kid and your folks or somebody would be pushing on that swing. You say, higher, 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 higher. Just go with the flow and live your life. Do the best you can, because the funniest part of it all is, you know, look back and say, how on earth did I do that?
Absolutely, Nikki. Thank you so much for your time. Truly appreciate you this evening.
Oh, Tika, thank you so much. And to the listeners out there, please drop me a WhatsApp, whether it's a question. It doesn't have to be a pre-order on a book, whether it's just a question or you need some inside from my side or whatever, please just feel free to send me a WhatsApp.
Mm-hmm. Nikki, appreciate it. Have a lovely evening further, whatever's left of it.
Oh, absolutely. And you too. Thanks,
thank
everybody.
You. Thanks, Nikki.
Cheers then. Okay,
Nikki Bauer,
bye.
She is an author and living with bipolar for 14 years, and she speaks about that in her very book. It is called The Memoirs of a Bipolar Bear. So do get in touch with her on 082-441-5795 if you'd like to pre-order that book from her.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.